Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by John Murphy, who's serving as our worship associate, Karen Lapidus, our director of religious education, our music director, Hal Walker, and a small group of singers from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir who have prepared some special music for this morning. Lighting our chalice this morning and also the menorah is Shana Steinhaus, Max Grubb, and Sophie Grubb.
We'll be sharing with you what we do every night for 8 nights right now.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lehalichne shehanukah. Blessed are you, Adonai our God, sovereign of all, who hallows us with mitzvot, commanding us to kindle the Hanukkah lights. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam She'asa nisim la'avoteinu ve'imoteinu bayamim ha'hem bazman hazeh. Blessed are you, Adonai our God, sovereign of all, who perform wondrous deeds for our ancestors in days of old at this season.
And this is the first day only we say this blessing.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Shehechiyanu v'kiyimanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. Amen. Blessed are you, Adonai our God, sovereign of all, for giving us life, for sustaining us, and for enabling us to reach this season.
My high-tech note here. Just a few thoughts about Hanukkah for me. I grew up in a Jewish home, and the lighting of the Hanukkah candles brings a lot of happy memories of my childhood, shared family time, getting to pick the nightly colors of the candles, getting scolded for trying to blow out the candles accidentally, the wonder and magic of light in the darkness, and of course, good food and being an American presence. We were to display our Hanukkiot, or menorah, in an open public place. It made me proud to be a Jew with a history of people who were brave, who fought for justice for the oppressed, who sought to live freely and have hope for miracles. And as an adult, I strive to use this time to rekindle my belief in social justice and freedom and in miracles and to share this with my family.
Why should we, Unitarian Universalists, celebrate Hanukkah? Maybe the bigger question is it okay for UUs to celebrate this Jewish holiday or any Jewish or even Christian holidays? What would be then? What would we do then at Passover, Easter, Kwanzaa, or even Christmas? Last night was the first night of Hanukkah. Millions of Jews around the world lit candles to celebrate the rededication of the temple by the Maccabees. My mother's mother was a Jew, and they both survived the horrors of World War II in Hungary. I don't say this to brag about my Jewish chops, if you will, because I wasn't raised in the Jewish tradition at all. In fact, my father was a Calvinist, and I really wasn't raised with any tradition except Easter and Christmas. My only exposure to Judaism was when I visited my grandparents at Passover, and my grandfather would rush through prayers in order to get to the feast. But I digress. The point I'd like to make is this. Unitarian Universalists are in a unique position of having no holidays or even all holidays. We do celebrate this holiday season with typical Christian symbols, starting with this giant, formerly pagan symbol behind me. We commune together in this space at Christmas Eve and bring light out of darkness as we light candles and sing silent night, holy night. The light of one candle is such an enormous symbol. Almost every faith lights candles as part of ceremony. The Buddha says, just as a candle cannot burn without fire, men cannot live without a spiritual life. A Chinese proverb says, better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. A Hindu Diwali greeting says, candles of hope are burning bright, filling our hearts with eternal delight. Hope, joy, prosperity, and health, wishing you happiness and peace. And a Hanukkah greeting says, may love and light fill your home and heart at Hanukkah. With respect and appreciation for the wisdom of all of the world's religious traditions, come, let us worship together.
To lead us into a time of meditation and silence and prayer, these words from David Rankin. There must be a time when we cease speaking in order to be fully present with ourselves. There must be a time when we exclude clamor by listening to nothing whatsoever. There must be a time when we forego our plans as if we had no plans at all. There must be a time when we abandon conceits and tap into a deeper wisdom. There must be a time when we stop striving and find the peace within. Let this be our time. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer, a prayer that I will lead, but which you will create. Often the prayers that I deliver on Sunday mornings come from my own heart, my own spirit. And I've heard a few of you say that you appreciate prayer but don't know how to pray. And there are lots and lots of ways to pray, but this morning I'm going to lead you through one simple way to pray. So if you like, if you're willing, as I lead this prayer, I will begin with a phrase, begin with a salutation, and then move through the prayer. But after each beginning, I will stop speaking, and you fill in the rest silently. And so this will be both your individual and our collective prayer. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder. We gather together this morning because we need.
To be one friend.
In this past week, we have not always lived up to our expectations for ourselves in each and every moment. And so this morning we confess. And we set our intentions. In this week to come, we will. We lift our hearts in thanks because we know we have been deeply blessed. Today we are grateful for. And we ask for a blessing upon the people, the communities, the nations who are struggling. We hold in our hearts especially may this prayer soften us and strengthen us so that this day and the days to come, we live the lives that are longing to live in us. Amen. Blessed be.
Hanukkah by Reverend Lynn Ungar. Come down from the hills, declare the fighting done. Be bold, declare victory, even when the temple is wrecked, and the tyrants have not retreated, only coiled back like a snake, prepared to strike again. Come down, try to remember a life gentled by daily acts of domestic faith, the pot set to boil, the bed made up, the table set in calm expectation. When the sun sets, we will still be here. Come down and settle. Unlearn the years of hiding. Light fires that can be seen for miles, that dance and spark and warm the frozen marrow. Set lamps in the window. Declare your presence, your loyalties, the truths for which you do not expect to have to die. It would take a miracle, you say, to carve such a solid life out of the shell of fear. I say you are the stuff from which such miracles are made.
Our hymn of affirmation, like many songs, has a story. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about it. It's called Tula Kalizio, and it's in our hymnal, our teal hymnal, Singing the Journey. It was written by Joseph Shabalala, who is the leader of the South African group Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And it was written in the late 80s, when he was in the United States. South Africa was still struggling with apartheid, and he was here raising awareness, engaging in activism, and his family, especially his children, were back in South Africa. And as he was sitting in a taxi cab in New York City, he was overcome with this fear that he might not see his children again. And all of a sudden, this phrase came to him, Tula Kalizio Nala Pasa Kaya, which means, be still, my heart, even here I am at home. Tula, be still, Kalizio, my heart, Nala Pasa Kaya, even here I am at home. Be still, my heart, even here I am at home. Tula Kalizio isn't a Hanukkah song or even a Jewish song, but the message of the song and of the dance resonates well with Hanukkah's history and meaning. Tula Kalizio is a song about being faithful and determined, even in difficult circumstances. And finding a way to dance the traditional dances despite the order to desist, the Zulu people demonstrated courage and exemplified the importance of maintaining identity through tradition. Courage, determination, faithfulness, and the importance of identity. All of these values can be found in the history and traditions of Hanukkah. So let's start with the last one on that list, the importance of identity. In the United States in particular, the celebration of Hanukkah has long been an important means of celebrating Judaism and cultivating Jewish identity. Though it's a relatively minor holiday in the Jewish year, Hanukkah always falls near Christmas. And as we all know, Christmas in this country is a powerful force with an overwhelming presence. Back in the mid-1880s, many of the customs that we think of as Christmas traditions were just beginning to flourish in this country, many of them imported from England and Europe. And as they did, many of the Jews living in this country felt the desire to lift up their own traditions in the presence of this evolving Christmas that was being celebrated all around them. So some of those traditions drew from the history of Judaism, such as kindling the lights of the menorah. Others, such as exchanging greeting cards for Hanukkah, grew in response to the ubiquity of greeting cards for Christmas being exchanged. In fact, one of the founders of the whole greeting card industry in the United States was a Jew. There's a newspaper advertisement from December 16th, 1879, placed by the Young Men's Hebrew Association calling for a grand revival of the Jewish national holiday of Hanukkah at the Academy of Music in New York. The idea was to lift up the celebration of the festival of Hanukkah as a distinctly Jewish festival in the midst of the festival of Christmas. And it wasn't only young Jews in New York who had this idea. At the Pittsburgh Rabbinical Conference, which was held a few years later in 1885, Rabbi Kaufman Kohler, who later went on to be the president of one of the rabbinical schools in New York, presented a paper urging attendees to allow Hanukkah to compete with Christmas, to allow it to compete with Christmas. Special concern was expressed for children who were subject not only to whatever feelings they may have had in response to their peers' experience of Christmas, but also concern about Christian missionaries who were endeavoring to lure Jewish children to Christmas celebrations with promises of fun and sweets and gifts. To combat that influence, Kohler argued that Hanukkah ought to appear in a more festive garb of light and joy in order to be a strong competitor of the Christmas festivity. It seems to me that those efforts worked. These days, most people who aren't Jewish have heard of Hanukkah, though they misunderstand the festival, often thinking about it as a kind of Jewish Christmas. That is, of course, completely untrue. Hanukkah has more than one history, allowing for more than one interpretation, but a counterpart to Christmas it is not. The oldest history of Hanukkah goes back to the years in the second century before the Common Era, the 160s BCE. At that time, the Jews of Judea were ruled by a Syrian king named Antiochus. Antiochus and his soldiers were Hellenized Syrians, which means that they had embraced the habits, customs, and beliefs of the Greeks who had conquered them, incidentally, 150 years before. The Syrians were undertaking a campaign to Hellenize Judea. This included introducing many Greek rituals and customs and outlawing traditional Jewish practices. Now, the Jews in Judea were not of one mind about this Hellenizing influence. In fact, there were at least three distinct groups. One group had great admiration for Hellenism and the worldly ways of Greece, and they embraced the new ideas and customs. Another group accepted just certain parts of Hellenism, but rejected Greek religious beliefs and practices in favor of their own Jewish beliefs and practices. And then there was a third group that rejected Hellenism entirely and experienced great anguish at the suppression of their Jewish identity, culture, and religion. The details of this history are recorded in the books of the Maccabees, named for the heroes of the story who came from that last group, the group that rejected Hellenism outright and entirely. This group was led by a priest, Mattathias, and his five sons, who came to be called the Maccabees. This small group of rebels, probably supported by some people from that moderate middle group, waged a guerrilla war against the Greek Syrians, and against all odds, they won. As soon as they claimed victory, the first order of business was to restore the desecrated temple in Jerusalem. The Greek Syrians had profaned the altar with their own religious rituals, which included the sacrificing of pigs, and later had set about to deliberately destroy the temple. Extensive rebuilding and restoration was required. Second Maccabees records that the Maccabees finished cleansing the temple on the very same day that the Greek Syrians had profaned the temple, the 25th day of the month of Kislev. The text goes on to say that they celebrated the rededication of the temple for 8 days, remembering how they were living in caves and fighting in the mountains during the Jewish feast of Sukkot. According to the history, the public assembly passed a measure proclaiming that the Jewish nation should celebrate those 8 days every year. So according to this history, the reason for Hanukkah is to celebrate the Maccabean victory and the rededication of the temple. From this history comes the idea that Hanukkah is about religious freedom. But there's another story, this one from the Talmud, the book of Jewish law and tradition compiled and codified by the rabbis around year 500 of the Common Era. It's in the Talmud where we find the instruction to place a Hanukkah lamp by a door or a window. It's also in the Talmud where we find the story of one day's worth of oil that miraculously burned for 8 days. Did you notice that there's not anything about the oil in the Maccabean version of the story? Many scholars and religious leaders have reflected about the rabbi's intent, explaining that by the time they were compiling the Talmud, the independent state of Judea had been completely destroyed, conquered again. They were writing at a time where many Jews were endeavoring to rise up against the oppressive power of Rome, only to be brutally suppressed. The rabbis knew that military might would not prevail in this context, and that what people needed was what Rabbi Arthur Waskow calls the rabbinical kind of power, the power not of rock, but of water, in order to survive. Not only that, but the rabbis also knew that the Maccabees had set themselves up as kings when they defeated the Greek Syrians, and that their descendants were the ones who had invited the Roman Empire to become the protectors of Judea, ultimately paving the way for the Roman conquest. So for all of these reasons, the rabbis did not want to highlight the victory of the Maccabees. So instead, when they wrote about Hanukkah, they emphasized instead God's power and the miracle of the light burning, but not being consumed. From this story comes the idea that Hanukkah is about celebrating God's relationship with the people of Israel and the importance of keeping faith. And there's still a third story, though this one lesser known. Rabbi Waskow explains that it is likely not accidental that Hanukkah happens to be celebrated near the time of the winter solstice. It's likely, he writes, that the Greek Syrians deliberately chose the 25th of Kislev for making their own sacrifices in the Jewish temple because they were observing the winter solstice themselves with their own pagan rituals and traditions. Further, he writes, it's likely that when the Maccabees took the anniversary of that desecration as the date to rededicate the temple, they were also endeavoring to reclaim the day which some Jews had embraced as part of a pagan festival, to reclaim it for Judaism. In this history, he says, the lighting of the candles redirects the pagan torchlight and fires in honor of the sun. And so from this story comes the idea that Hanukkah is about a festival of lights, about finding renewed hope and faith in the darkness of winter. So Hanukkah has many meanings. The particular meanings that are lifted up in any one community are often influenced by the surrounding cultural and national context. In the United States, themes that are often lifted up include faith and courage, faith in God and courage to stand up for Judaism when it's under attack by forces of oppression or even assimilation. We know the Jews have often been under attack, but I want to tell you one story in particular. This one takes place in December 1993 in Billings, Montana, though it began several years before that when a group of white supremacists declared Montana to be one of the 5 states that they intended to claim as an Aryan homeland in the United States. They declared their intention to rid Montana of Jews, people of color, and gays and lesbians, and over a period of several years, they made their presence known with repeated acts of intimidation and harassment. By the end of 1992, they had become a visible presence in Billings. Community leaders tried to organize against them, but that seemed to only increase the frequency and ferocity of their attacks. They overturned headstones in the Jewish cemetery, spray-painted swastikas on houses, tried to intimidate people attending services at the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and vandalized the house of a well-known American Indian leader in the town. In December 1993, the violence escalated. One night, at the very beginning of Hanukkah, one of the white supremacists threw a cinder block through a window of the home of a family named the Schnitzers. The block landed on the bed of their 5-year-old son, Isaac, who luckily was not in the bed at the time. He was watching television in the other room with his younger sister. Brian Schnitzer, his father, was, of course, terribly frightened for his children, so he put them to bed that night underneath his own bed, telling them that they were playing camp out. And then he waited for his wife, Tammy, to get home from her meeting, where she was co-chair of the Human Rights Commission in Billings. They called the police, and the officers came quickly, and they were not unkind, just uncertain. They advised that the Schnitzers should take down the Hanukkah decorations that they had in their son's window, the menorah, the Star of David. Tammy spoke with a reporter from the local paper the next day who wrote a story. On Saturday, Margaret McDonald read the story in the local paper. She imagined having to tell her own small children that they needed to take down their Christmas decorations in order to be safe in their home. And she thought that that was unacceptable. So she called her pastor and asked if they could have all the children in the Sunday school that next Sunday draw menorahs and then ask everyone in the church to take them home and put them in their own windows. Well, her pastor thought that was a great idea, and he got on the phone and called the clergy at the other houses of worship in Billings and asked them to do the same thing. So the end of that Sunday, hundreds of families in Billings had menorahs in their windows. My spouse's aunt and her family were living in Billings at the time. When they heard the news, they're part of the Quaker Fellowship, and they immediately went out and bought a menorah to light and set in their window that night. The very first night that they had the menorah in their window, they heard their house surrounded by the sound of firecrackers, and they were frightened, but they didn't take it down. The next night, their cat was shot with a hunting arrow. Their cat survived, but they were very frightened. So were many of the other families in the town who had taken the risk of putting menorahs in their windows. One of them, who hadn't decided yet, one family, called the chief of the police in the town and asked his opinion about the advisability of putting a menorah in their window. "Yes, there's a risk," he said, "but there's a greater risk in not doing it." So more and more people decided to take the risk. And then the local newspaper decided to take a stand. They ran a full-page ad with just a picture of a menorah. And then on the facing page, it encouraged all the readers of the newspaper to cut the menorah out and paste it in their window. And local businesses got in on it too, passing out menorahs and urging their customers to put them up in their windows. And so as more and more people did, the white supremacists lashed out even more. They broke the doors on the United Methodist Church, which had a menorah. They fired shots into the Catholic school in town, which had menorahs on their windows. They kicked in windows of cars parked in front of houses with menorahs and more. But the more that they lashed out, the more people joined the campaign. By the end of December, nearly 10,000 families in Billings were displaying menorahs on their windows. No one was ever arrested for the violence, but gradually it ceased until finally it stopped. The power of hate was defeated by the power of community, and Jews were once again free to worship in freedom. So John asked at the beginning of our service whether Unitarian Universalists are justified in celebrating Hanukkah. Our tradition has been deeply influenced by the wisdom of Jewish teachings. Many individual Unitarian Universalists identify as both Jewish and Unitarian Universalist. And in some congregations, including the one that I was first a member of, a significant community of Jewish UUs, or Junitarians as they often call themselves, celebrate the Jewish holidays as a marker of the annual church year. So that is my imprint of Unitarian Universalism. There's much that we can learn from Hanukkah. It's an ancient story with many lessons for life. The lesson that I lift up today is the need for all of us to be defenders of religious freedom. Still, there are people who would try to intimidate and oppress others with violence. Just earlier this week, in Cypress, Texas, the members of the local Islamic Outreach Center arrived for prayers to find a slaughtered pig on the doorstep of the temple. This is both a profound desecration and a clear message of hate. But here's the good news. Local religious leaders, including Christians, Jews, Muslims, several Unitarian Universalists, and even the leader of the local humanist group, immediately responded. They reached out to the members of the Islamic Outreach Center to offer support, wrote a letter to the editor, and set upon educating their own members. This is how we're called to live in community. The history of Hanukkah can serve to remind us. And so I leave you this morning with the words of Rabbi Laura Geller, who wrote this piece on Hanukkah for the Huffington Post. "What's the real miracle of Hanukkah?" she asks. "It's the miracle of human courage that empowers us to take risks for the future, even in our imperfect, uncertain world. It's the courage, even in the darkest of times, to create our own light." May it be so, and amen. We have gathered in dedication to the proposition that beneath all of our diversity, there lies a unity which binds us one to the other, to the earth and to the stars. We've gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Amen.